This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's program will focus on cloud computing initiatives within the Department of Defense. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss progress being made in cloud computing at the Department of Defense. With me on the show today are Mike Krieger, the U.S. Army Deputy Chief Information Officer, G6, Alfred Rivera, the Director of Computing Services at DISA, David X, Principal Architect, Red Hat, Jeff Bergeron, the CTO of HP Enterprise Services, and Bill Clark, the VP Public Sector CTO at CA Technologies. Let's get into the discussion. Let's start with you, Mike, at Army. Tell us a little bit about some of the initiatives you have ongoing with cloud computing now.
Thanks, Jim. Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. You know, our biggest initiative is enterprise email. As you know, we're migrating 1.4 million users from email at Post Campus Station to email on the DoD cloud that's hosted by our DISA partner. Started in March, and we're already up to over 220,000 users.
Wow.
As of last week. And so it is a great initiative. Very much increased security, increased effectiveness, and saving a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that security question. We're going to drill down on that because there's a lot of questions about security in cloud.
So we've learned a lot, and I would argue it's a lot more secure than doing it locally.
Oh, terrific.
Now, the second thing that's right on the tail of that is we're doing enterprise SharePoint. Mm-hmm. So we're moving to a centralized collaborative environment for the Army. Again, we're partnering with DISA and that DoD cloud. Mm-hmm. And that we think we're off to a good start. And the final thing I'd mention is, as industry's done over the last 10 years, we're finally looking at rationalizing our applications and moving those enterprise applications back into the DoD cloud.
Yeah, terrific. You know, I think cloud and data center consolidation does give you the opportunity to step back and take a big picture look again in directions you're going. Let's go to Alfred Rivera over at DISA. What's some of the initiatives DISA has right now around cloud?
Hi, Jim. Well, like Mike Krieger mentioned, we are partnering hand-in-hand with the U.S. Army in moving forward with this enterprise email as one of the mm-hmm. biggest initiatives in terms of putting something in the cloud and
right.
SharePoint. But I would say that part of that is really putting the foundation behind all that stuff and some of the things that we've done from an infrastructure as a service perspective in building these capacity management partnerships with our vendor community mm-hmm. that allow us to be agile and flexible in putting capability in the cloud so that we can meet those dynamic requirements that the Army and all the other services put on us. So some of the infrastructure as a service capabilities, some of the platform as a service mm-hmm. capabilities, and we could talk a little bit more about that. But those foundational systems are going to be the heart of making sure that these capabilities that we're doing for the Army and hopefully the other services are available.
Yeah, sounds exciting. I can't wait to drill down on some of these issues. Let's talk to our private sector colleagues here. Bill Clark over at CA. How's a company like CA positioning to help government move forward? And what are you guys doing to move this cloud initiative forward?
Okay, Jim, good. Good morning. Thank you. What we're doing, and it's good that we brought up the first couple of applications, email and collaboration through SharePoint, et cetera, as going into the cloud. And as our company looks at the cloud, we've taken an application-centric view. Mm-hmm. And we've said, how do we help our customers determine what it is that they have, their portfolio of applications, and then how do you position them? Should they be put in an infrastructure as a service platform or software as a service or stay in the traditional data center? All four of those have ramifications. And so some cloud decision software as well as some cloud decision methodologies we've put in place to
right.
help our customers make those decisions.
Yeah, terrific. And I know we'll probably talk a little bit about that, you know, private clouds, public clouds, hybrids, and
right.
what's private, what's public, and what makes sense, and probably what makes sense for one agency may not for another. So it's going to
right.
be very interesting to watch that whole thing evolve. Jeff Bergeron over at HP Enterprise Services, tell us a little bit how you guys are positioning to support this cloud movement across government.
Thank you, Jim, and good afternoon to everyone as well. From an HP perspective, I mean, we look at the comprehensive ecosystem of cloud and enablement of that, right? So we're looking at ways that we can fully automate cloud stacks in a private-based model, because that's where the economic and cost savings come in. From an innovation standpoint, we're looking at ways at which clients can manage hybrid cloud environments in a secure, policy-driven way, recognizing that not all cloud services will be sourced from one provider, one vendor. Right. How can you have that centralized catalog, and how can that be controlled securely through policy and role-based decisions so that we can source cloud services to the individuals that need that service as well? In addition to that, we assist our clients from a transformation standpoint on building the building blocks, for where they need to get to, and how do you transform? Starting with email, obviously, is a core tenant on that journey towards cloud. But as Mike mentioned earlier, that kind of apps rationalization and moving and virtualizing systems into the cloud is certainly a key tenant as well. So HP looks at it from a very comprehensive aspect on how to automate, how to manage, and also how to transform.
Yeah, terrific, great. Look forward to hearing more about that. David X, over at Red Hat, how's Red Hat playing in this cloud environment and supporting your government customers?
Thanks, Jim, and good afternoon, everybody. Well, there are three big initiatives that we've been working on lately that we're really proud of that are gonna be rolling out very soon. The first one is Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization 3.0. That is, we're expecting that to launch next month, and it, you know, beyond the typical, it could scale bigger than before, and it's a fraction of the price of the proprietary competition. One of the things that's really unique in it is that it includes a technology called SVRT for secure virtualization that uses SE Linux, which we've worked with the NSA to make mainstream. We're now putting that as part of a core part of our platform to make sure that cloud computing is secure. The second component that we have is we're working on an initiative called CloudForms, which allows us to have very much the same way that Jeff was talking about having, you know, the reality is that you're going to have multiple hypervisors in your environment, multiple cloud providers, and being able to have a single view of all of your cloud infrastructure, whether you retain it or somebody else is managing it for you, having that view is very important, and that's what we're doing with CloudForms. The third component that we're really excited about is a recent acquisition that we've made. We've bought a company called Gluster, and they have a product called GlusterFS. And what's really interesting about that is it's software only, so you could have your file system reside on, say, HP storage, or it can reside on Amazon-based storage, and you could have a single view of a file system no matter whether it's in your data center or in a publicly hosted data center. And what's really interesting about that is if you look at cloud companies that are using this technology right now, one example is Pandora. And I'm sure we've all used Pandora, you know, to do the music streaming and all that. That is running on top of Gluster. So they have thousands of users streaming terabytes of data a day. And imagine what we would be able to do for the warfighter if we're able to, instead of streaming music to the soldier, what if we could stream, you know, mission information to them?
That's right. That's right. But we'll have to start streaming the video of the show, you know, via this stuff. that's interesting. You know, I guess when you think Red Hat and cloud and things Jeff was saying about heterogeneous environments and things like that, the open source world seems to make sense in a lot of places there. Let's talk about the benefits. I mean, is it all about cost reduction, or what other benefits are we going to see coming out of these movies? Let's start with Alfred Rivera this time. Alfred, what are some of the big benefits you see by going to cloud environments?
So I think, like I was mentioning earlier, some of the concepts that we're putting in place, like platform as a service, the benefits I see out of that is that you're going to have ability to build a common framework of not just at the infrastructure level, but at the middleware level and at the services level, where multiple communities can take advantage of that. So it's not just an economic perspective, but it's an efficiency perspective and potentially an information sharing perspective. So having services like mediation and discovery available to multiple communities definitely shows some opportunity for the warfighter to have visibility from an information sharing perspective, or the technologies to do that. So those fundamental aspects are key benefits that are more than just economic. I think the virtualization concept, where we're not having to have our real estate at the data center compromised by having, you know, low utilization of processing across the floor and taking advantage of multiple virtual machines on single platforms is going to be a not an economic issue, but a better use of the infrastructure as a
right.
whole for the department. So those two areas I see are benefits that that cloud would move us toward.
Right. Terrific. Mike Krieger, what do you think are some of the big benefits you see by taking the approach you're taking?
So as a CIO, I look at things through a lens of three things. Operational effectiveness, as Alfred talked to, mm-hmm. security, and mm-hmm. efficiencies.
Okay.
And all three are huge benefits. If I just pull the thread on enterprise email a little bit, and one of the problems the Army had, we owned the software Exchange. We had an ELA with Microsoft. But believe it or not, before this year, we were running Exchange 2003, mm-hmm. although we owned Exchange 2010. And the reason was really that we hadn't resource enough procurement dollars to go from 32-bit servers to 64-bit servers.
Right.
And so going to infrastructure as a service, we don't think we'll have that problem anymore. And there are a couple other things you don't think about. With enterprise email, the really killer is this is now providing a DoD global address list. So before, no matter where you were, your global address list was constrained.
Right.
But now I have a global address list with 3.5 million users. Anybody wow. with a CAT card in DoD is in my global address list. Huge killer app.
Yeah.
The other one that was always constraining was when we hosted Exchange, we had 100 megabytes of storage. It was the Army service level.
Wow.
And so I was always running out of storage. This has given us 4 gigabytes.
Okay.
And so hugely more operationally effective. The second one, security.
Mm-hmm.
So the Army, of course, looked at this as not trusting initially in the partnership.
Right.
And we wanted to see, you know, we know how to secure things in the Army.
Right.
But what we've discovered, having analyzed DISA's architecture and their security, is that it's actually more secure than the way we used to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're using more state-of-the-art technology, newer applications, and they're doing it at the DISA boundary now. It's not getting into the Army. So security's improved. And then significant savings.
Mm-hmm.
We estimate, you know, the Secretary of the Army's gone on record saying we estimate about $100 million a year savings from DISA hosting the software that we owned versus us hosting it at individual post camps and stations.
Yeah, terrific, good stuff there. How about Jeff Bergeron? What are some of the benefits you see for the government and coming out of all this?
I absolutely see it, and I agree with both Mike and Alfred on their points around platform standardization, portfolio rationalization, mm-hmm. having that common framework from a platform standpoint that applications can then be sourced from is certainly key. It takes control of the IT enterprise,
mm-hmm.
Being able to have a set standard stack that applications will be built upon and supported through. And I think that's ultimately key. And that's efficiency, that's cost savings, as well as security, to Mike's point as well, being able to drive those into the organization and into the enterprise as well. And we've seen that across governments. Being able to manage those environments is key, being able to standardize on those. And I think the challenge that some would see is the migration, as Mike mentioned earlier, on how do you get those old applications into this new
right.
model.
Right.
So the transformation is certainly something that needs to be addressed
yeah.
and is achievable
in
these models.
I think so too. I think it might take some new models. You might have to think through some of this, especially with the budget situation like it is. I mean, what we don't want to happen is we don't have the upfront transition money to get to where
right.
we need to go, because we know the savings are on the back end. And
yeah.
The way the budget cycle is right now and the tenseness around the budget,
yep.
you know, that part gets to be somewhat of a risk. But hopefully there'll be new models to get through that. And, you know, things like performance-based approaches, maybe even
yep.
share and savings approaches, things like that can enter the equation again.
And the other aspect of that as well is the unleashing of the information that's within the enterprise. If you look at the defense segment as well, being able to have access to data to make informed decisions through this common framework, through this common platform
right.
as well. So you begin to expose information that you didn't even know you had in these types of models as well as you move into these integrated cloud services-based models.
Yeah, and I would think speed and agility to make changes and things like
absolutely.
That you know, are going to be dramatically improved. David X, anything you can add here on the talk about the benefits you see coming out of this?
Yeah, and I had to smile whenever Alfred and Mike was saying that, you know, one is with Alfred with the information sharing and the other part with Mike and the global address book. When you have cloud computing, that forces people to collaborate. And the big thing there is that whenever people are collaborating, that shifts the power away from the vendor over to the user. And the important, and I can't think of a better way to collaborate than open source. You know, being from Red Hat, of course. But you know, everybody wants to work from a common interoperable baseline, and the lingua franca of by being able to do things with open standards and open source allows that communication to thrive. One example that I'd like to throw out of a success that we've had is at Spawar. We've been working with the folks in Charleston out there to develop a platform as a service stack, and not only have those guys been working on it there, folks in the intelligence community have picked up that stack and they're using it now. And we've even seen interest in the Air Force where they want to host that on in the disarray center. And the really compelling thing there is that if you have this very brittle, very monolithic stack, you're not able to take it from one community to another. But if you base the components modularly, ideally using open source technologies, that portability allows you to go from one place to another, and that collaboration builds a better service for everybody.
Right. Yeah, good point. Yeah, and I know Alfred made the point about application rationalization and collaboration, and I guess for the first time, you can begin looking at things that were done independent in the past and realize some of these things are somewhat benign. We really can move these more into a shared environment. They're and isolate off the things that need to be isolated, but look at, I think that a lot's going to happen down there. Bill Clark, how about over at CA? How do you see some of the benefits? Sure. What are some of the big benefits we're going to see coming out of this?
Well, first I'll say before I'll preface my comments, one of the things we're learning is that the industry's not necessarily mature in terms of understanding the cost, the model.
Right.
What's the business model and how do you look at the cost savings over time? That's still an ongoing effort.
Right.
With that said, I think if you look at what we've seen from the benefits of cloud, a lot of it is around the application development lifecycle, where what you're doing is you're giving the application developers a much shorter window through a service catalog to order the infrastructure or platform they need to build and test new applications.
Mm-hmm.
And so where we've seen capability there, what we've done is helped take services or applications and virtualize those.
Right.
So where we've seen virtualization of services themselves, what you can do when you're building these new applications is instead of having all of this infrastructure behind it to test it, you virtualize that. So now all of a sudden I've taken millions out of the infrastructure needed to actually build cross, if you will, composite applications, and we're seeing tremendous savings there in that type of cloud initiative.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. I mean, we've been doing the show, we've been talking cloud now, I guess, for several years, and I remember going back years ago when we first brought it up, we were defining what we meant by cloud. And over time, we watched the progression. It's been exciting to watch, and more, it's becoming more and more real every day. So we've been talking about the benefits and all the good things, but there has to be challenges out there, too. There's got to be some tough things. So I want to switch the dialogue over and talk about some of the big challenges that still need to be overcome. But before we do that, we need to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
No doubt, cloud's promise is appealing. Wary about the return on investments, risks, governance? Let the experience of HP guide you to cost-effective, secure solutions. Cloud solutions are a dynamic addition to traditional IT. Open up new ways to source, deliver, and govern highly scalable and flexible services. HP can help you navigate this new paradigm by blending their hardware, software, consulting, and managed services expertise. Make cloud a viable option for mission-critical needs. Shape your own cloud with HP. Visit hp.com/government/cloud.
Okay, you've heard all about how the cloud can support collaboration and save your agency money. That's great. But here's the critical question. Can the cloud be secure? CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems, including the cloud. So can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems and data? With CA Technologies, you can. Learn how at ca.com/cloud.
The White House's 25-point IT reform plan has everyone talking about cloud first, agility, speed, and standards. Hi, this is Paul Smith from Red Hat, the most trusted open source company in the world. The largest public clouds run on open source, and Red Hat helps agencies build clouds the open source way. private, public, or hybrid, you'll have your choice of vendors, deploy your applications quickly and securely, and keep control of your infrastructure. Join us at redhat.com/cloud and follow us on Twitter at redhatgov.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Mike Krieger from the Army, Alfred Rivera from DISA, David X from Red Hat, Jeff Bergeron from HP Enterprise Services, and Bill Clark from CA Technologies. We're talking cloud and cloud evolution in government. When we went prior to the break, we talked about benefits. And I like to turn and talk about some of the things that are still difficult that we need to accomplish, some challenges that are out there that we need to get through in order to get where we want to go. Let's start with our industry guests this time. David X, what are some of the challenges you see that still need to be overcome to get where we need to go?
Well, Jim, I think historically, whenever people deploy infrastructure, it was often specified and delivered on a program-by-program basis. So each program got to decide what hardware they're going to use, what software they're going to use, how it's all going to be implemented. And an unfortunate side effect of that is that even though the programs may work well by themselves, the interoperability is a challenge, reuse is a challenge, and even getting those technologies implemented in a cloud solution becomes a challenge as well. I'd like to congratulate Mike and a lot of the work that his group has been doing with the Army CIO G6 with the Common Operating Environment Architecture, where what they've done is they've come up with guidelines to, you know, how are we able to rapidly test, develop, certify, and deploy capabilities a lot more quickly.
Right.
And so one of the things that we're really proud of is that Red Hat is listed on that list. So Red Hat Enterprise Linux is listed in that baseline.
Right.
As an option for an operating system. Mm-hmm. And also JBoss is called out for portal services or service delivery and frameworks. And I really think that even though you have a plethora of tools that you can use whenever you're building things for a program, mm-hmm. having that standardized toolbox, I think, will really help with interoperability.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I've also taken the position, I think that standard sort of technical reference models and things people have are going to have to evolve with time too, because, you know, as time goes on in the true cloud environment, you want to reach out, especially with infrastructure as a service or applications as services, you want to reach out and grab whatever there. So it's going to be whatever's the best approach, and it's going to be a challenge for some agencies that have a long process in order to, you know, get things certified, accredited, and all that. So those challenges will be interesting to watch. Jeff Bergeron, what do you think? Some challenges you see as you're working in this area that still need to be overcome?
Yeah, first I do want to second the comment about the speed at which you have to deploy applications in these models, mm-hmm. as well, and the certification and accreditation. That needs to be addressed in order to make that happen.
Right.
So whether it's upfront certification of products and capabilities and services, but we have to speed the implementation out to market,
yeah,
because cloud.
Can you imagine when our kids get into the workforce,
oh,
and they're going to want to go out
there
and start grabbing them apps left and right?
That's right. That's right. And I'm going to turn the table a little bit, because the other aspect that we tend to forget sometimes is the human capital impact that cloud has. The organizational change management that needs to take place.
How
individuals consume IT services under cloud is vastly different than how they consume them today. So preparing the enterprise and the organization for this migration to cloud, because if you think about the tenets of cloud around self-service and automation, individuals need to know how to obtain that and how to govern that and how to manage that. So there's a huge human capital impact that needs to be addressed in this transformation, which is somewhat focused on an IT perspective,
right,
but it really has huge implications on the stakeholders of the enterprise as a whole.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It really is going to change the dynamic of the organization and the individuals working in the organization.
Yeah.
Bill Clark, what do you think from the CA perspective? What are some of the big challenges that you feel like we still need to get over to get to where we're going to go with this?
Yeah, well, I'll address three of many, but the first, which I won't go into detail, is procurement. Again,
okay.
The procurement model
is going to be a challenge for some traditional acquisition people.
We've been with agencies who've actually asked us, how would you solve this? And, of course, it's not an easy issue to solve the way the government's organized and the way programs are funded. The second thing we see is the need to have application portability and data portability. In other words, if I'm an agency and I've committed to a managed service provider, how do I know when you give me a bill at the end of the year whether I can move that stuff off and go to someone else?
Yeah.
And that that's a big challenge. One of the things we've done for our managed service provider network, as well as our customers, is provide a cloud platform that allows for that portability. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll mention is the mobility, mobile computing. People want to get access from anywhere. How do you secure that? Right. How do you know who's coming into your network? How do you handle that? And so that's a big challenge. And so, again, we've built some solutions to help mitigate those concerns.
Right.
But those are three major
areas. And we were talking mobility before we started doing the show here, and it's a hot topic right across government, and it's clearly one where we're dedicated an entire show just to
exactly.
that topic, because there's so many things to talk about there. Alfred Rivera, how about some of the challenges when you sit down and get to work in day? What are the things you're looking at that you need to get done and get over, the big challenge that to get where you want to go?
Jim, I think I could put it into three different perspectives, okay, real quickly. David was very clear in terms, I think Dave and Bill were talking about the culture of the heterogeneity that exists out there mm-hmm. and the life cycle, the acquisition right. life cycle that we have to deal with. We've got to change the way we do the acquisitions mm-hmm. for applications and programs into moving them into a cloud environment and the processes behind that. That's one of the challenges. I think there still exists, from a culture perspective, the box hugging mentality. Yeah. And what I mean by box hugging mentality is people still want to know that they own this piece right. of that environment, and they nobody can use it, and it can't be shared among the, right. the community. So we've got to break that paradigm shift. And I think the third one is, and this is what Mr. Krieger was talking about earlier, as we go through this rationalization of applications across the enterprise, we have a large legacy environment that we've got to address. Not everything just seamlessly rolls into a cloud environment. So there's a lot of work, not from just an acquisition perspective, but from a transitional perspective and transformation perspective. That's going to be a big challenge for the next couple of years, especially in a constrained funding environment.
Yeah, I could see this being tough. You know, you want to go to cloud, but you don't want to move really old legacy stuff that's ready to be replaced, but then you need the money to replace it, and it's going to be interesting. And I think you're right. It's a lot different when you're looking at something as a service and a service level agreement. That's a lot different than the traditional ways of doing things. Even with the, as you call them, box huggers, you know what I mean? If in a true managed service, you know, you're supposed to be using whichever particular sets of tools can meet the service level agreement the best. And so you may not even really be making a decision about the brand or the product or whatever. Mike, what do you think? Mike Krieger, Army Hour. What are some of the big challenges yet that you face day to day that you feel like you want to overcome to reach the vision you have?
So it's been very good comments. Let me start with Ralph or let off mm-hmm. and pull that thread a little bit. So the one of the big issues is modernizing, virtualizing, and moving it to the cloud. Mm-hmm. But let's step back a minute. So it's really, you got to rationalize your applications so you can get rid of this legacy. So governance is a problem.
Yeah,
now, in the Army, we proposed for all the applications we got, and we're kind of following what HP and the Navy did with NMCI. So find all your applications, and we're saying you get three bins. You either agree to modernize, virtualize them, and move them, or you kill them, the bin I like, mm-hmm. or everybody's got their favorite application that they, you know, the world will end if they get rid of it.
Right.
But they don't want to modernize it.
Right.
And that's the hard ones, right? And so we got to have strong enough governance to bin them. We got to have strong enough governance when you bin them to kill them. And you really got to address those legacy ones that people don't want to modernize. Because right. those are the most expensive to sustain and the most insecure.
Mm-hmm.
So governance is always hard, right?
Yep.
Governance is a problem. But the other one is cost transparency. So when we started this DISA partnership, and Alfred and I mean, we have a long history here. It was very hard. DISA uses the Defense Working Capital Fund, and you know they have to break even, so they can lay out all their costs. It was an interesting discussion with the Army because there's no cost transparency in the Army. I don't think we're different than federal agencies. So one command is paying for the application, the installation is paying for the power in the building, somebody else is paying for the bandwidth. So it's really hard in government to compare your current cost of doing business with moving it to either DISA or a commercial provider.
Right.
Because it's hard to get to that fully burdened cost. Mm-hmm. And nobody's paying that fully burdened cost except the big Army. So cost transparency is key here.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one that was mentioned is we got to look at policies and legislation. Because you want to get to the point where a vendor can sell you an application in the cloud, right, once you separate data from applications. Right now, how do you do that? Do you do an RFP for an application?
Yeah.
Right? There's not a really easy policy or legislation in the FAR for how I buy an application from a vendor.
Yeah.
You don't want to do an RFP for every app.
Yeah.
Right? So I really think the three things are this governance, this cost transparency, and the policy and legislation.
Yeah, very good point. And I think you're right. I think we're all in agreement here of the challenge that's coming along with it. It's not going to be straightforward. And I think, you know, Jeff brought up the human resource side of it, changing jobs. I think some of your points, you know, I want to hold on to my old system. Some people will see change as a threat, you know. And, you know, we can't do that. You might change my job, whatever. Let's talk about that security concern a little bit more. In the early, when we first started talking cloud, we had a lot of discussion around, oh, I don't know, security is going to be an issue. I mean, you know, so if we have other providers involved, you know, it's going to be a risk-sharing thing and cause whatever. Let's start with Alfred Rivera. I would imagine DISA looks at this issue pretty in depth. So how are you viewing the security question moving to cloud?
Okay, so bottom line, we run a private cloud in the Department mm-hmm. of Defense.
Right.
So within that private cloud, we control the perimeters associated with that. Like Mike mentioned at the beginning of this of our discussion this morning, or this afternoon, the idea that we built a security architecture all the way to the perimeter with an active defense and active monitoring capability put in place allows us to ensure that we have that security in place associated for all the applications in that private cloud. So we've got those technologies, the processes from web content filtering to continuous monitoring that ensures that we are putting in place those security perimeter, processes in place all the way to our applications.
Yeah, terrific. And Mike Krieger, you made mention you felt like that with DISA and now the cloud and going to the cloud, you feel like you're improving security. And can you maybe elaborate on that a little bit? Why do you see that happening?
Okay, so there, it's really interesting. We talk about this global information grid in the DoD.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is every component is hiding behind firewalls and we're really all
right.
enclaved and we all have our own wide area networks on the gig. What the thing that's changed with our partnership with DISA is we've kind of looked at the DISA purple zone, this DoD private cloud that DISA hosts, is actually very secure. And it gets beyond the Army security stack. And so suddenly you can share information across the Army. You're not mm-hmm. fighting firewalls. And so we're starting to become a big believer that the DISA, and we call it the purple zone, the DISA zone is inherently more secure, and it's its security in depth at the perimeters, and we've really enabled information sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're starting to become big believers that getting out behind the Army firewalls and this putting the data in this DoD private cloud is a good thing. But let's talk about public clouds for a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, and again, there's some legislation here you gotta look at. So there's
right.
lots of rules in the federal government about security of personal identifiable information.
Correct.
And where we can put it and where we can't. But you know, for our Army Accessions Command that recruits soldiers, right? Well, when they're recruiting you, you're not a federal employee. And so one big private cloud pilot we have going on for a while now is our Accessions Command is using the CRM application in Salesforce.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's legal because they're gathering information on prospective
right.
DoD employees, but not DoD employees.
Right.
And so, you know, there is use for large public services and public clouds. I think we got to go the policy route, right?
Right?
So when can you do it and meet the legislative requirements and when can't you?
Right.
I think that it's possible to have as secure an environment in public infrastructure, but there's all sorts of policy things here we're going to have to collaboratively work our way through.
Yeah, no, you're right. I know several agencies are talking about putting their public-facing systems out in public clouds because there's no real data there. I mean, it's just, you know, none of their... And while they're looking at keeping things that are inherently governmental in the private cloud. Bill Clark, how about CA? How do you look at that security question going to cloud computing versus traditional ways of doing computing?
Sure, I'll address that in two ways.
Okay.
One of the first would be for those who are providing the services. As Alfred mentioned, you have to secure the server and the data. You have to wrap that. We have technologies for segmentation of duties and to ensure that that happens and auditability on who's done what and when. And you really lock down the potential threat to the code, if you will. and the data. The second, which we see is even more of an impediment, is the fact that I have all these different people in all these different roles. How do I make my attributes and credentials fine-grained enough so that I can allow access appropriately to those applications and data without what we find is you have a kind of a tiered model, and most of the tier is I'm going to be risk averse, and so I'm not going to let anybody see anything.
Right.
And so how do you undo that? And so we're involved in role in identity-based management and something called FICAM,
right,
which is to help really mitigate that,
right,
and give access through fine-grained controls to data and information. So
yeah,
we call that content-aware identity management.
Right. Yeah, identity management is a gigantic issue. We've done a number of shows on that, and you can go all kinds of directions on that one too, and there's big programs. So you're hitting on some real key points there. Let's talk to Jeff Bergeron about this question, the security question. You know, it's over time, people seem to be getting a little bit more comfortable. In the very beginning, one of the big things, cloud of security, you know, government.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But how do you face that issue?
So we're absolutely starting to see the identification of the security profile of the information, as Mike mentioned. Could this information actually go into a public cloud and still be compliant with legislation and policy that's existent today? So we're starting to see that segmentation. If it's publicly accessible, publicly available, publicly transparent, put it in the public cloud. So there's that threat profile that
right.
needs to be determined around the criticality of this information and data. Because one thing that is of major concern is as data becomes information in this big data world, how does the classification of that information evolve and change? As I start to combine different sources of information or data that makes information, mm-hmm. what is the classification of that? So the industry is working on ways, and HP is working on ways in which we can help government define that classification of information as we talk about data interoperability and data integration as well. We're also looking at unique ways, because in this ever-changing world of cloud and versus traditional, in this multi-tenant world, how can you physically isolate these environments on a single server, on a single machine? So looking at it from a hardware perspective as well, being able to isolate these environments so that you can have multiple tenants on a single server, but have them securely isolated from one another as well. So the industry is starting to evolve in deploying technologies that actually enable this world instead of adopting what has traditionally been placed within traditional IT models.
Yeah, very good.
All right, so we're starting to see that evolution occur.
Yeah, I think it's that evolution is going to play, and it'll play into mobility too. I know there's a lot of conversation going about isolating business applications and serendipity applications on wireless devices.
And you raise a really good point associated with that really quick around mobility is the consumerization of IT. People want to carry one device.
Right.
And I want to be able to have those segmentation of profiles. So we'll see some evolutions
in the
mobility space.
Mobility device to also slide in and be our docking station for our workstation at the desk.
Exactly.
And David, I want to hear from you. But before we hear your answer to that question, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The White House's 25-point IT reform plan has everyone talking about cloud first, agility, speed, and standards. Hi, this is Paul Smith from Red Hat, the most trusted open source company in the world. The largest public clouds run on open source, and Red Hat helps agencies build clouds the open source way. Private, public, or hybrid, you'll have your choice of vendors, deploy your applications quickly and securely, and keep control of your infrastructure. Join us at redhat.com/cloud and follow us on Twitter at @RedHatGov.
Okay, you've heard all about how the cloud can support collaboration and save your agency money. That's great. But here's the critical question. Can the cloud be secure? CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems, including the cloud. So can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems and data? With CA Technologies, you can. Learn how at ca.com/cloud.
No doubt, cloud's promise is appealing. Wary about the return on investments, risks, governance? Let the experience of HP guide you to cost-effective, secure solutions. Cloud solutions are a dynamic addition to traditional IT. Open up new ways to source, deliver, and govern highly scalable and flexible services. HP can help you navigate this new paradigm by blending their hardware, software, consulting, and managed services expertise. Make cloud a viable option for mission-critical needs. Shape your own cloud with HP. Visit hp.com/government/cloud.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Mike Krieger from Army, Alfred Rivera from DISA, David X from Red Hat, Jeff Bergeron from HP Enterprise Services, and Bill Clark from CA Technologies. We're talking challenges around implementing cloud. We're talking about security. We're talking about benefits. A lot of exciting stuff. I know the comment was made that, you know, one thing about cloud is you get a chance to step back and look at the big picture. You know, over the years, I would argue, having taught cybersecurity for 17 years on Saturdays, that we've had a Band-Aid approach. Something would break, we'd fix it. Something would break, we'd fix it. Something would break, we'd fix it. Going the cloud, to me, seems to be a fresh opportunity to step back and take a look at the big picture again. And I know I used to always kid people. I used to say it's disappointing the term firewall even exists. Because, you know, the reason we have the term firewall is to protect ourselves from malicious code. Well, if we would have built the system to be secure in the first place, we wouldn't have to have these firewalls in place. But anyway, with all that as background, let's go to David X. David, how do you, as Red Hat, the open source company, how are you viewing that security issue as you support government move into cloud?
Well, thanks, Jim. And one of the things I'd like to build on Jeff's last point is that, you know, the promise of cloud is the benefit of multi-tenancy. And even like in the case of DISA, it's a private cloud, but you have tenants from people that are outside of DISA using those assets, from the Army, Air Force, other agencies. But that is, you know, the along with the benefit of the multi-tenancy, one of the big security concerns is what happens if a hypervisor gets compromised? And what happens to the virtual machine disk files that are attached to that SAN? Not just the ones that are running on that hypervisor, but all the ones that are attached. Is your entire cloud compromised? Mm-hmm. So having the checks and balances in place is really, really important. I would argue that it's not a matter of if your hypervisor gets compromised, it's more like when. Because we've all seen that there are flaws in VMware's hypervisor, Hyper-V's hypervisor, even Red Hat's hypervisor. Right. And having those protections in place is sort of like the belt and suspenders approach to security is very, very important. And one of the things that we provide, as I mentioned earlier on, was a technology that we're adding in a big way in Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization 3.0 called SVERT. And so that is our answer to helping to put force fields around your hypervisor, around your virtual guest. So if all of a sudden there is an exploit, the hypervisor cannot see the virtual disk files of any of the systems. It can't see the guest. Mm-hmm. So it provides that layer of protection. And one thing that I would always, you know, I always, as people are looking to move into the cloud, you know, finding out from your cloud provider, how are you addressing those things that whenever a hypervisor does get compromised, what are the procedures and policies and what are the protections you have in place to address that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good points there, too, also. You know, I think your point, the resiliency one, is the one I relate to there, you know, that you're going to have problems, anyone who believes that there aren't going to be vulnerabilities here and there, but being able to recognize them and have the resiliency to recover from them quickly, I think, is going to be a key. Let's talk a little bit more about hybrids in public clouds and private clouds, because it's confusing trying to figure out what's what here. Let's start with Alfred Rivera. Now, I know you see, it's completely understandable, DISA would be sort of the private cloud provider for many of the DoD, but are you looking at things that potentially could be, you know, brought from public clouds or hybrids, or is that issue on the table? Or are you focused pretty much on the private side?
So our energy is on our focus. Energy is on the private cloud. Really putting the mm-hmm. the mission critical applications on a private cloud within the department and focusing our energy on that. However, we also recognize, like Mike had mentioned earlier, there are components out there that make sense to put out into the public mm-hmm. sector, into the public area, or the hybrid cloud construct. our relationships and our partnerships with other federal agencies where we need to share information, our relationship and partnerships with humanitarian organizations when it comes to supporting events like that where we need to share information. We are looking at how we can partner with industry as well as our other federal partners and how we can merge into some form of a hybrid cloud. And that is ongoing right now. So we will see areas where there's going to be this partnership outside our private area.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be exciting to watch it, Dan. We'll talk before the show ends here about what that future is going to look like. So we'll come back to that one. Mike Krieger, what do you think? Same general idea in terms of, are you looking at things that you can turn over to the public cloud and get back as a service?
Absolutely. I mean, I mentioned the Accessions example of Salesforce.com, mm-hmm. and Alfred nailed it. It's really policy now. So what data can you put in a public cloud? What data must be in a DoD private cloud, and where can you use hybrid clouds? In my mind, it's really going to come down to updating the policy. Mm-hmm. We're a very large business in the Army. And we have data that could be in public, could be in private, and must be in DoD private.
Yeah, and I think you already mentioned governance. I imagine a good governance structure for decision-making, because I'll just take a wild guess that everybody doesn't agree with everything all the time.
Imagine that.
Let's talk a little bit about, from our private sector guest, how are you seeing the government, from your perspective, how are government agencies evolving here? Are you seeing public clouds, private clouds, hybrids, mixes? Let's start with Jeff at HP Enterprise Services.
So we're absolutely seeing the hybrid model evolve within mm-hmm. public sector today, and that's the mix of both public, private, and the ability to manage that is critical. But again, it goes back to identifying that security profile of what information could be put into a public domain that wouldn't compromise the mission or the objective that we're trying to get, and it comes down to policy as well. So a lot of innovation around the management of how do you manage those types of environments, and specifically around DoD as you move into coalition forces, mm-hmm. you know, just having conversations with folks in NATO as well. How do you share information and how do you manage that across multiple domains as well as key? So definitely a hybrid approach to the sourcing of cloud services within public sector. We don't see a one size fits all for everybody. And also included in that is the transformation that needs to take place. We talked about that a little bit earlier. That needs to be managed in this hybrid environment as well, because you're going to have a mix as you transform of traditional IT and applications and cloud-based systems as well. And how do you manage that throughout that evolution? So the hybrid includes a holistic approach around traditional public and private.
Yeah, it really takes some risk analysis and mitigation to determine what are the real risks here. I remember conversations with Secretary Rubin where back in the days where home pages were being hacked up, government agency sites, and everyone was all excited about it, we got to fix this. And I would say, Mr. Secretary, we do have to fix it, but I need to tell you something. There's no real data on that home page. I mean, all it really is an embarrassment, maybe a little bit, but we can fix it in minutes. The data is back in the computer center, so where are we going to spend our money on security? Let's spend the money where the real risks are. We need to move towards the future here. We got about 12 minutes left, and we like to talk at the end of all these shows about predictions of where all this is going, what's going to look like, how it might change the world we live in, how government agencies. So we're going to start with David X over at Red Hat. David, share a vision for the future. What do you think we're going to see down the road? Where's this all going? I mean, what's your crystal ball look like, several years out?
Well, Jim, I think the times are going to be really, really interesting coming up. Cloud computing, I think, is going to lead to more and more commoditization of the data center. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen is that's going to drive costs lower and lower. And the benefit there is one of the open source credos that we have is to fail faster to succeed sooner. Mm-hmm. And by if the cost of failure is very, very low and the risk is very, very low, people are willing to take more risks and try different things and do multiple experiments and maybe come up with the next great solution. So I think that part is really, really exciting. The elasticity to be able to try new things. You don't have to do a large capital outlay.
Right.
And you could do things inexpensively in parallel. You could scale up without having to worry about, you could scale back because you're paying by the hour for your computation. Then the other thought, too, is that think about all the data that is being generated these days. You have petabytes and exabytes of data that is just sitting there that hasn't been mined yet because we haven't had the capabilities and the technologies to be able to do that. Right. So some of the neat things that I see coming along is a lot of the unstructured big data problems that are being pioneered by Hadoop and with, say, like a GlusterFS mm-hmm. backend, right. We're going to be able to try new things to be able to better support the warfighter. And to me, that's really exciting.
Right. Yeah, I know big data is one of the new terms that everyone's talking about around town. Jeff Bergeron over at HP Enterprise Services, what's it look like? Where's this all going down the road, Jeff?
I see a very untethered workforce moving aggressively into what we today call mobility, but in the future it becomes that pane of glass by which you access information. Mm-hmm. So the ability to have very secure, dispersed ways of accessing information across the globe is something that we'll see. So it's not really the device that you're using, it's how you access that. It could be a PC, it could be a mobile device, it could be a 3D panel on the wall, being able to access that information. So very untethered world, but that requires certainly modernization of our network infrastructure and our wireless infrastructure to, one, make it secure, but two, make it pervasive around the globe as well. So we'll see those advancements take place, and I think we'll just see us carrying devices and being connected to whomever we need to be connected to at a given time.
I agree with you. I was participating in an event, of what it's going to like in the technology world, in a world where time is approaching zero, because, you're going to be instantaneous decision-making and available to do that anytime, anywhere. Bill Clark, what do you see? What's your crystal ball look like? Where's this all going?
And I'm going to focus this just on DOD.
Okay.
If you broaden it out, it gets even more complicated, but not that the DOD is not. We see the Department of Defense moving toward a Google or a Facebook type of environment. In other words, commoditization of hardware, mm-hmm. driving down the cost tremendously. And what you do is you abstract the data and application away from the underlying infrastructure. So you're really virtualizing everything almost, appliances, firewalls, you name it. Mm-hmm. And that way the data and the app is portable. So now all of a sudden I can have mini clouds out in the theater using the important mission critical apps delivered to the warfighter in a timely way. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of change, but we see an ecosystem of partners for the DOD with high-level security vetted by DOD for continuous monitoring to enforce the fact that the data is secure, the people getting access to it through mobility is secure, mm-hmm. but now you've built and used the technologies to accentuate. It doesn't solve the legacy problem. I think we're talking about new apps. Mm-hmm. There has to be investment to rewrite a lot of the legacy code. It's hardwired. And so you have this new paradigm going on along with a transfer of legacy back into this environment over time through investment. Yeah, that's what I see.
That's good. That's easy to visualize that to your head. You know, the mini clouds feeding off the big clouds. Alfred Rivera at this, I would imagine part of your job is to be thinking about strategy for the future and out for the future and what it's all going to look like. What's it look like down the road to you? Where's this all heading?
So I'm going to give kudos to Bill and to David because I think they got into my cloud and talked about some of the ideas I had. But let me do a little transition here because I think if you think about what the future needs to look like, agreeing with my colleagues say here, I think we need to change. We're going to have a new process in terms of the acquisition and the policy processes. They're going to change the way we do agile development across the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. We're going to have in place a technology that allows us to do virtual agile development from development to test to production. We're going to have this coalition of capabilities between our communities that do development and use this common framework, this common cloud, where we can get these applications fielded quickly in an agile mode and do repetitive replacement as well as repetitive changes to these applications using storefront technologies and agile development technologies that will just break this whole paradigm of how we do an acquisition for major applications.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's going to be all kinds of challenges here that we're going to see. I think a change is coming big time right across the board. And when you talked about someone on your cloud, why did that Rolling Stones song come to my head? Hey, you off of my cloud. You know what I mean? I could see that argument going on inside a data center right now. You know, it's my cloud. Mike Krieger, in your role at U.S. Army, I think you not have to be thinking not just today, but what it's going to look like down the road. Where do you see all this heading in the future?
So let's look at it from a user's perspective, and I think Jeff nailed it. So today, in the Army and in DoD, a user's perspective is miserable, right? So I have to have my government laptop, I got to have my government VPN, or I got to have Citrix to get access to where my data is. But I think Jeff nailed it, right? So my vision is, and we're seeing it with enterprise email, I can get on with a government or personal computer as long as I have two-factor authentication, and I can access my data and do my work. And we're seeing glimpses of that now. I was in Hawaii last week visiting Army Pacific. Mm-hmm. And from either my government laptop or anybody else's government laptop last week, to include a DISA laptop, I was able to just log on and get my email from the browser. Very powerful. And I recently got an email from a colonel in Army Sustainment Command who's been on enterprise email for a while, and he had to go in theater. He went to Kuwait and Iraq. And his comment to me was, for the first time ever, no matter where he traveled, he was able to get on a computer with two-factor authentication, get to his email, all his data was in the DISA cloud, and he could operate. He never had to set up anywhere. He never had to leave any data behind. Never had to leave a PST file behind. Right. And so I think Jeff nailed it. I mean, the vision is that our users from either a government or private or mobile device, as long as they have two-factor authentication, that they'll be able to access their data, and it's always in that private or that public cloud. And yeah. I really think that is the vision, and I only think we're a couple years away from that vision.
Yeah, it's back to the living in a world where time begins to approach zero. I do think we have a couple minutes for me to do a little bit of a try to wrap up some of the highlights of today's show. I think, you know, we started talking about what's really happening, and what we see happening is email, SharePoint, some apps rationalization going on, things that are the obvious first choice is to move to the cloud, a little bit more benign than some of the mission critical stuff that's going to require a lot more governance and culture discussions. Benefits, in addition to the obvious being cost. We heard about better discovery of what's available, what's there. We talked about operations, security, and efficiencies. Agility, speed, faster deployment, faster to the market with applications. And collaboration's one that came up for the first time I thought was excellent. And I think it does force collaboration. By its very nature, it requires collaboration. We did say there's challenges out there yet, interoperability and CNA certification, certifying accredited systems fast enough to be agile. Organization change came up today, which was an excellent point. It's going to be challenging to some of the staff and individuals. All of a sudden, you have to do things different. And we know, I think it was Robert Kennedy said, 1/5 of everybody's against everything all the time, no matter what it is. So, change in the air is going to be a challenge. We talked about procurement challenges. I think that one is real, too. I think, you know, moving to service-level arrangements and new models and how to procure this is going to be require new models and more creative and innovative approaches right across the board. Governance came up, and a good governance model, I think, is probably going to be a key to having in place and settling on the decision-making process. And cost transparencies, because I guess when you're in a shared environment, not everybody's going to agree, okay, sure, that's my share of the cost. It's a little bit more complex than that, to getting everybody to agree on what their share of the cost would be. Having built the Treasury Consolidated Data Network once in my career, and having back then the 16 Treasury bureaus figuring out the cost model for how they pay, was always interesting. I see the future too taking off from what you're doing. I mean, if you really want to go out there, you know, you could see a future someday where DISA is supporting the IT services in the DoD world, maybe somebody like a GSA or a general, and more stuff moving that way to where you will have less and less individual agencies needing to run big, large IT systems, and more of it moving to these shared models. I think that's clearly the direction. I think it's the culture issue and those challenges we talked about that'll be the real key as to how fast that happens. I first want to thank all of our panelists here for taking time from your very busy schedule. I know you're in a very senior position, so thank you so much for coming and sharing your thoughts with us. Thank our sponsors, without which, of course, we couldn't do the show, and WTOP, WFED, and all the fine people here that make this go so smoothly. And most importantly, thanks to the listening audience. You've been listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the 2011 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show was produced by the Trezza Media Group and the Fleisig Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.